Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inch. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back here on the program Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator at the U of I, with U of I Extension here in Champaign County. And once a month, on some Tuesday, we can't figure out which, we're sitting here talking.
How many years have we been?
Is it the second Tuesday? Is it the third Tuesday? It's one of the Tuesdays. She is here, and we give you the chance to call in and ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. The idea is that if you are having some kind of problem, and at this point, you know, maybe you're still thinking about some sort of problem that you had in the last growing season, and you're not quite sure what to do about it, or you are starting already to think about what you'd like to plant, then when things get going again here, and it's only six weeks left in climatological winter.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. We're now mid-January, so it's the middle of climatological winter. So it's really not going to be all that long, I'm sure, before things are going again. So if you're already starting to think about what you will be planting in the coming growing season and you have some questions about that, we can talk about houseplants. If you have things indoors, any and all of that is certainly welcome. And I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good. Anywhere that you can hear us, that's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. It's very nice to have you here again.
Good morning.
Now, the reason that for all of the confusion is that we wanted to talk at least for a second about what we would be doing next time on the show, on our February show, because we will have, whichever Tuesday it is, we will have an additional guest, a special guest. Right?
Yes, we're going to have Janet Makunovich, who is actually from Michigan, believe it or not, but she's coming, I guess for a couple of reasons we're talking to her. She's going to be coming to our Garden Day, which is March 2nd and 3rd at the Holiday Inn in Urbana. And we do this every other year where we bring in specialists from all over the country to talk about a wide variety of things. And actually, Janet's going to be coming in. We've had her a couple of times in the past, and we keep bringing her back because she's so good. She's one of those folks that, you know, she really can condense, you know, especially landscaping and design, and make it like you think, oh, well, that makes sense. I can do that, you know, kind of thing. So, and she's written a couple of different books, one on designing your gardens and landscapes. She's also done one on care of perennials, which are two really great books. So Janet Makunovich is going to be on the phone as we talk next February. Whatever date that is, as soon as we come up with that.
Yeah,
people can talk to her as well as myself.
Okay, good. Very
good. So it'll be fun.
And this is, see, I say this same thing to myself every year. You think, okay, the winter time, you're not actually out there working. This is the time to plan. You should be doing research.
That.
You should be learning things. You should be spending your winter evenings sitting beside the fire, looking at books of garden design and thinking about now, what would I like to do? I'm sure that everybody's got areas where they think, oh, I think we should change stuff around in here. Or they have some area that they think, well, we can develop this particular area. But you need to have, it's probably a good idea to have a plan in beforehand so that you're not then at the point where you're going to the place where the plants are and you're just sort of wandering around thinking, well, what should we get?
Right.
This is the time you should be actually thinking about that.
Right. And that's why I think, especially there are lots of programs this time of year, besides we're just doing our Garden Day in March, but there's lots of programs out there. So I think this is a good idea, good time to sort of take advantage of that where you can talk to other folks. But also just kind of looking at some of the books that are out there and going to the library, as you said. I think, and just maybe just even traveling around town, or as you're traveling around town, get a chance to sort of look at other people's landscapes and kind of see the things that you like and things that you don't like. And I think that helps a lot because a lot of us have a hard time just visualizing, you know, what's it going to look like? I don't know. I want something there, but I'm not quite sure. So if you can get a better idea, and this time of year, of course, is like usually the kind of the worst time for a lot of gardens. So if it looks good now and it looks appealing now, then you know it has pretty good structure to it. You know, I know it's kind of an old adage to say bones, but this is that time of year where you can really see those bones of the garden, what really stands out. And I think a lot of times that's the part that we really need to spend more time sort of designing. So things like the sidewalk, maybe the sidewalk is just too narrow or it's not in the right spot, it's not the right material. Really would like to have an arbor there, maybe need trees or something that has more structure to it. So if it looks looks good now, then it's probably a pretty good garden.
Yeah.
So spend a little time doing that, and I think that'll help, too.
Yeah. And I suppose, too, this is when things are not growing. This is one of the challenging times because you want to have something to look at. The
right.
big thing
right.
that I think
right.
a lot of planners try to help people with or that people want is they want year-round interest.
Sure.
And there's all kinds of things going on when things are actively growing in the summertime. But now at this point when everything's dormant, you still would like to have something to look
right.
at. And probably now also it would be a time where you can go around and see, well, what features remain? What's still there?
Right.
What can you do to give you something interesting to look at when things aren't growing and blooming?
Yeah, actually earlier I was chatting with someone about berries. You know, this is that time of year where you can really see what berries or fruit are remaining because this is late season. So if it's something that still has nice looking berries and that's something that we like because we like that red color or yellow or whatever it might be, and if they're still remaining now, then you know that's a pretty good one. It's hung on for a long time. It's going to give you a long-term interest. It may not be the best plant in the world for wildlife because it may not be one that they really like all that much, but in some respects, it's kind of good. Then we get to look at it longer. So one of the things that I was mentioning is hawthorns. We'd always think about hawthorn. It actually can be a fairly nice small to medium-sized tree, depending on which ones you get. And they don't all have thorns on them, despite their name. There are some very nice ones. Winter King's a really nice one. It has a few thorns, not very many. But it tends to have a nice red-orange fruit on it that stays for a long time. And we like that. So even this time of year, you'd still see some fruit on it. So those kind of look around, again, kind of look around town, see if you can figure out what some of these plants are. And we try to help at the Extension office as much as we can if people need plant identification to bring something in. Now, this time of year, obviously, it's a little harder without leaves, but a lot of times we can get it down pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a caller and would certainly welcome others. If you have questions, give us a call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We have someone here ready to go in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yeah, so as I wander around looking in people's backyards, just before they call the police, I say, Sandy Mason told me.
Sandy told me.
She told me to do
okay.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just don't expect me to get bail for you.
Well, the other point is that my backyard is in really bad shape. It's my next big project, so... Anyway, I'll have pictures and just show them, and then maybe they'll feel sorry for me.
There you go. Good idea.
What is the name? I've only lived here a few years or so. What's the name of the association that does sort of the natural, you know, in terms of plants and stuff to do the backyard? Sort of the, not quite the, I don't know, not the long grasses and stuff, but some of the plants and stuff.
Are you thinking about a local organization?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Well, I don't know if you're talking about Grand Prairie Friends, Prairie Grove Volunteers. They don't necessarily do landscapes and stuff, but they certainly help out when it comes to maybe some suggestions when it comes to, you know, landscaping with native plants and putting in small prairies and those kinds of things. Is that, I don't know
yeah.
if that's what you're thinking of. Certainly, and also just the National Wildlife Federation has a program of the backyard gardens and really has some nice information on their website about sort of, you know, if that's kind of what you're going for, more like a naturalistic and sort
yeah,
of dealing.
Yeah, you know, non-cutting grass.
You want to cut grass. So, you know, that might be a good place to start, even with some of the websites. I know Grand Prairie Friends also has a website as well. And
it seems to me also, is there something about at Lincoln Square or somewhere other where they have some kind of a show or somewhere they trade? I don't know.
Well, maybe you think Grand Prairie Friends does do a plant sale starting in May at the Lincoln Square.
Okay.
And maybe that's what you're thinking of.
Okay. And this other one sounds interesting, too, the natural. What about, there used to be, in you know, there's so much black dirt and things of that nature. Is there any way that you can get black dirt without paying for it except...
Legally?
You know, sort of the midnight auto sales thing, I guess, you know. But
the black market, the
dirt
true black
out of the
market.
Trunk of this guy. Yeah.
I can see
black
it.
Market. That's good. That's good.
Well, I think probably the thing, you know, I don't know, you know, you'd have to just be lucky to find somebody that just happens to have some black soil they want to get rid of. But I think maybe your best bet might be just, and it's not necessarily going to be free, but it's pretty inexpensive is the compost out at the Landscape Recycling Center. Because a lot of times we have, you know, really pretty good soil, but, you know, maybe it's a little more clay than you want. And really what you're trying to do is just add more organic matter, which gives it that black color. And that's where you get, like, compost. And you can really get, you know, you can get huge loads of it, or you can go out and get small bags of it. It was pretty inexpensive stuff. And it's just a, you know, a great way to also sort of recycle the landscape waste that we have around here. It's good stuff. They really do a nice job of grinding it and, you know, getting any kind of debris or whatever out of it. So we've had a really good luck out at the Idea Garden. We use a lot of their compost out there and have really good luck with the plants. So you might think about the compost at the Landscape Recycling Center. It's way out on East University.
Yeah, it's in Urbana.
Is that,
Well, it's quite a drive back there.
Yeah, but consider it an adventure.
Well, actually, you know, what happened is that I didn't know there was, I think the hours, I didn't exactly what the hours were, but I was on my way back, and that's the point, they were closing the gate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think they do close at 3 or something like that, but they're in the phone book, you can give them a call, and really any, pretty much anywhere you are, there are places like a landscape recycling center where you can get stuff like that, so it's a good way to add to your soil.
Yeah, for the final, you know, the black soil on the top, but I've got, somebody had a swimming pool, and above ground, but they dug somewhat below ground for it, and so I'm got a fair space to, I got rid of it, and I got a, but great ideas. Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, sure, good
thank
luck.
You. And then so what you need to do is then just till that stuff.
Sure.
Ideally, get yourself a tiller, unless you really want to do it by hand, and just churn it all in and get it mixed in real
nice. Yeah, you certainly could. If it's on a vegetable or flower garden, sometimes I just top dress it and just put a couple of inches on the top and let the worms and just all the processes just sort of take over and let them sort of till it through. So you can do kind of either way. If you're actually going to like reseed grass, I know he wasn't into grass, but if you're going to do something like that, I'd probably till it first.
Yeah. All right. We have some other callers here. We have someone in Kankakee calling on the cell phone. So they are next. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm actually in Kankakee today, but I'm from Champaign.
Okay.
I was near the Paco warehouse in October, and by a and I know this is going to be a reach, but by a phone pole outside of the warehouse, there was the cutest, and even with, I think we'd had like a very light dusting of snow, kind of like we have today, there's this beautiful green plant with little purple star-shaped flowers on it. And I thought it was amazing that there was something actually blooming that late into the fall.
And when was this? This was in?
This would have been about October.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't quite, you know, I don't know. It must have been a little stretch of cold that we had at first and then went away. But there was this plant, bright green foliage, very low to the ground, seemed to be kind of spreading by some clumping. But it had this little flower stalk about 8 inches tall, with a half a dozen star-shaped purple flowers on it.
Okay, were the flowers kind of were the petals of the flowers kind of reflexed back, almost like a shuttlecock?
At the tip?
Yeah, kind of like a shuttlecock of a badminton.
Yes.
Badminton shuttlecock.
Yes.
I wonder if it's not nightshade, which isn't necessarily.
Oh. No. Well, I guess
there is a purple flowered. Yeah, there's a purple flowered nightshade as well as a white flowered one.
Okay, because I do have purple flowering nightshade in my garden. That I pull out regularly. I don't
think it's not
that. It was a larger flower than nightshade.
Oh, hmm.
I mean, to just go pick a piece of it and bring it by someday?
Yeah. That probably, I can't think of what else would be. Is it still green now?
You know, I haven't been by the warehouse for a couple of months.
Okay. That's the only thing I can think of that have a purple flower, other than something like asters or something like that, which are certainly purple in late season, but, you know, they're more of a daisy type.
Yeah, no, this was more of like a four-petaled, you know, kind of a flower. So I thought it was pretty unusual. Oh, well, okay. I will go ahead and pick it up.
Oh, you know what it might? Well, it might not be reflex, though. You know, there is, that'd be really late in the year, but there is Dame's Rocket. Do you know that? It actually has, it's purple and has four petals.
Uh-huh.
And it normally blooms very early in the season because it's kind of more of a winter annual, but it could have actually gone ahead and kind of done its thing and actually bloomed early because we got kind of cool and then it warmed up again. So it actually could have. So there's Dame's Rocket, which is, it looks more like phlox, though.
Okay, yeah, I'm not that familiar with it. It's called Dame's Rocket?
Yeah, Dame's Rocket. It's it's not one that we normally would recommend because it tends to be recede itself like crazy, and you know some of those things. And that's why I'm wondering if it and that would be a perfect spot for it, where it's just kind of come in on its own. But that would be my other thought. So you might look at a few pictures. Otherwise, next season as it comes up or whatever, then bring in a little sprout for us, and we'll figure out what it is.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call. Let's talk next with someone in Urbana. Line number three. Hello.
Hi, two questions. One about managing tulips and one about catnip versus catmint. We'll start with the second one. Is there a difference between catnip and catmint? I noticed you had an article in the News Gazette this week about a catmint that you were recommending.
Right. There is a difference. And actually, there's several different species of both. Probably the one we see most often in the garden, actually planted in the garden, is actually a catmint. They're both in the mint family, so they have some of the same characteristics, square stem, that kind of, you know, minty aroma, whatever you want to call it, kind of thing. But they have, depending on which one it is, they have very different attributes. Some of them reseed like crazy. I think the one I mentioned in the in my article, you know, I talked more about the Walker's Low, which is a cat mint. It's the perennial plant of the year, and it doesn't reseed itself, even like the regular cat mint. So it's really, it's one of those you kind of have to look around. Catnip is normally, almost looks more like a peppermint plant, if you're familiar with that. It's a large leaf, and it's taller and has a very, it's just bigger all around, whereas cat mint tends to be a little bit more delicate and smaller leaves and those kind of things. But they're durable plants. I mean, both of them are very durable plants. I think, as I mentioned in my article, it doesn't, you know, cats, you know, just act weird anyway. But they, you know, they definitely like catnip. I mean, they definitely will roll around in and stuff. And I just haven't seen that so much with cat mint. So there may be some preferences out there. So,
well, we have catnip that volunteers here and there, and I pull some out, and some new sprouts up someplace else. And definitely, I have friends I give the dried leaves to, and their cats go bonkers over it. So I don't want to totally eliminate it because I kind of like, kind of like pleasing some cats now and then.
And it's fine for certain areas. But.
Yeah. But continuing about the mint, so I've seen hummingbird mint at the Idea Garden. Does that actually bloom all summer or just have a really, seems to be a perennial, which to me means it would have a limited blooming time. But whenever I've been there, in unpredictable times, it's been blooming.
Yeah, it seems to have a very long bloom time, and it's Agastache or Agastache, depending on how you want to pronounce it, is the genus for that. And it really is a nice plant all the way around. You can get a number of different colors in it. It tends to be another kind of where the flower is a little bit more delicate looking, I guess I'll say, with kind of these spikes. So it's a very nice plant. I've been really pleased. I was a little surprised on some of the ones at the Idea Garden that they were as hardy as they seem to be, because some you have to be really careful with some of the Agastaches in that they're not hardy. They're like zone 7 and stuff. So maybe because we've had milder winters, I don't know. But, you know, you kind of have to watch that a little bit on how hardy they are.
Yeah, I can't be bothered with things that I have to baby along. I just forget about
them. Yeah. Well, I think you'd love cat mint. I mean, all the cat mints that I've ever had, they're so tough. Once they're established, they're so drought tolerant. You don't have to do anything to them. Probably the only thing you ever should, you don't have to do it, but it's a good idea, is that once they flower fairly early in the spring. They'll do this really flush of flowers. And then if you just prune them back, you know, cut them back, they'll look better, and then they'll reflower. So, you know, it takes you 5 seconds. You trim them back, and really great plants. I like I don't think I've ever met one that I didn't like.
And speaking about tulips, I finally got a combination several years ago of colors that I like that bloom in a sequence I like, with purples and magentas, and I even have one that's Blushing Lady or something like that. It's a tulip-flowered, lily-flowered?
Lily-flowered, probably.
And the unlikely combination of kind of pale yellow with some pink on it. I don't know why I picked it, except that the pink seemed to go with the magentas of the other thing. Mm-hmm. And I really like the tulips, but those particular ones don't last more than a couple of years.
Right.
It's hard for me to remember where they are. I haven't focused on trying to figure out how to mark where the clumps of tulips are, because I have them scattered in among beds where I have some other perennials, and then I interplant some annuals to fill in later on, and things like vegetables. So I'm wondering if people have a good system for figuring out when to give up on tulips that aren't going to make it, or whether you can bring them back, and a good marking system that doesn't look gross. So that between the time, over summer, they don't disappear totally, and when it comes to ordering or going out and buying new tulip bulbs, you can figure out where you need to put new tulips in and when to give up on the ones that are just not going to make it again in terms of actually flowering. They put leaves up. The bulbs are still there, but they just poop out on me.
Yeah, and some of the, and you're not alone, some of the tulip varieties just don't last very long. We really don't have, you know, particularly good conditions for tulips. They really don't necessarily like our hot, dry dry summers and our kind of wet, cold winters. They really don't like all that. And so some of them just, as you say, a few years and that's it. And so I'm not sure there's too many ways. You can, you know, try and divide them and see if that helps. But what I found is once they start to go, it's pretty well gone. An idea that I don't know where I got this, but I thought it worked out really well is using golf tees.
Oh.
If you get golf tees and then you can actually paint the tops like pink or whatever to remind you what color those tulips are or whatever plant it is that's not there at that particular moment. And I thought that was a really good idea because you can actually, you know, they're cheap and you can stick them in the ground. And so they're kind of underneath the mulch and they're not too obstructive. So you don't have to look at them all the time. But I thought that was a pretty good idea because you always will forget it right where they are. And you're always obscuring a few. So I think that's one good thing. And I think the other thing is maybe to take pictures in the springtime. There's just nothing better than having a picture because then you'll go, I really need something there. And it really will help you to remember. And with digital cameras these days, it's real easy to sort of do that kind of thing. So taking pictures, I think that will help. There are some of the tulips that will last longer. One of our master gardeners actually did a really nice article about that, and I'd be glad to mail that to you sometime if you want to give a call to our office. I'd be glad to do that. And it really has some nice comments about some of the tulips. So does that help a little bit? That's my way to figure out where they are. There may be there certainly are other ways, and maybe other folks have some ideas.
And I wanted to pass along to people that at the Idea Garden, somebody set up a test of different marking pens.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, the Sharpie Permanent lasted less like 2 months in the sun.
Isn't that something?
And they had actual the names of the pens and pencils on samples, so you could actually see and when they've been put on, so you could see how long they lasted.
Yeah,
and the names and where to get
right. That's
one. So I thought that was a useful test.
Yeah, I really should do an article about that because I think there'd be a lot of people who might be interested in that.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
Our guest this morning is Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. A woman who never met a cat mint she didn't like.
Uh-oh.
And she's here with us once a month, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have questions, you can call us. We have somebody who's been patiently holding on here. We'll get right to them. And other questions are welcome to 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Danville, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to talk about besides my original question. First of all, in that backyard wildlife habitat by the National Wildlife, they have a marvelous program, and my yard has been certified for over 25 years.
Oh, great.
The one thing that I started with a suggestion from a friend in Champaign was I have my yard is mostly clay, and I had a slope on the northwest corner, and I wanted to make that a shaded woodland plant area. And what he suggested was to strip the sod off and lay gobs of wet newspapers on the underlying soil, and then for 2 years, I kept filling it. My a neighbor up the street had a whole bunch of oak trees. So with his permission, I gathered and chopped up just lots and lots of, mm-hmm. of oak leaves and put on that spot and then started planting. And now it's just gorgeous.
It has
all kinds of Solomon seal and trillium and Dutchman's breeches and all kinds of lovely things in there. And my original question, the reason I picked up the phone to call, is I other than just spraying it occasionally, and that might only be once a year, if that, with miracid, what should I do to keep that area fertile? I do leave the leaves on it during mm-hmm. the fall mm-hmm. and chop them and replace them as mulch. But other than that, I really haven't done anything with that spot.
Well, to be honest with you, that's kind of the beauty of all that, is that you really don't have to do a lot of stuff. And really what you're doing, just shredded leaves, that kind of thing. If you think, especially the plants that you just mentioned, all those are forested plants for the mm-hmm. most part. And so that's what they want. They want those decomposing leaves, and that's the kind of thing. So you're doing just exactly what you need to do. So you really don't have to do a whole lot. Which
is
nice.
My...
yeah, I mean, it's
it is
nice. Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's really nice. And I will tell you something that I've discovered is that you don't really, you know, I think it was great what you did, but I have found that you actually don't even have to strip the sod. If you put enough, you know, wet newspaper over the top, enough layers of wet newspaper, put some compost and just layer it over, the sod dies on its own. So,
oh my goodness,
which is wonderful, because if you've ever, as you know, stripping sod is not much fun.
No.
It's not much fun at all. Yeah.
I think I blew out my right knee doing that.
Yeah. It's not much fun. So once I discovered that, I thought, oh, wow, we're working way too hard. So don't strip sod. Just...
I volunteer at a school that has Atria 3, and then one of the teachers is real interested in planting it, and mm-hmm. I had proposed to her this idea, and I would think the maintenance guys would be just thrilled that you know, it would, the grass that they are mm-hmm. mowing mm-hmm. would be replaced by paths of stepping stones and flowers sure. and such. The other thing you mentioned about flowering, I mean, berries on plants, being an avid bird watcher, those really have a value if the birds will eventually eat them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking
right.
in terms of high bush cranberry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they must have to go through several cycles of frost or something.
Yeah.
But the good part of that is that after all the, you know, the icing on the cake is eaten in the early season by the birds, then when you have in February or March a late snowstorm, why the birds come along and suddenly those high bush cranberries taste pretty good. I guess.
Right. And I think you're right. They have their preferences. They like the chocolate chip cookies and the crazy about
right.
sugar cookies, but I'll eat sugar cookie eventually. So, yeah, I think it's very much like that. So you're right. So it's good that they have something later on. Sure.
I might mention another source of plants at very reasonable cost is the Illinois Native Plant Society has a local chapter, and they meet alternately in Danville and Champaign through, I think we start in March, and the last is in November. And at the end of April, in conjunction with the Arbor Day sale of not necessarily native plants that are the shrubs and bare root trees,
mm-hmm.
They have a sale that same weekend at Forest Glen.
Oh.
And those are native plants contributed by members, and often 50 cents to $5.
Great.
The only bad part of it is that you know, it's great for early plants, the Solomon seal and,
mm-hmm,
and the Dutchman's breeches and some of the other good things like the Virginia waterleaf and the Virginia bluebells, but some of our plants aren't up yet.
Right.
It would be nice to, the Grand Prairie has their sale later in the year, so they have a better selection of the summer flowering plants.
Thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for the call. We certainly have time for other questions. If you'd like to call in, talk about what's growing in your yard or what was growing in your yard, what will be growing in your yard, houseplant questions, any and all of that is certainly welcome. Our guest, Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. maybe people might be interested in having you talk a little bit about things that you can put in that are going to be the very first things to flower and get going in the spring. Mm-hmm. For example, in our yard, we have a lot of snowdrops. And I think people will know that, and it's a really lovely plant. And it's one of the first things that will come up when you see that, you know, aha, spring, it's coming.
There's hope.
And there are some other things like that that you can, if you have the right kind of conditions, you can naturalize in there, and different things that will come up at different times. Some things that do also have some color. Is there anything in particular that you really like that you would recommend?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the nice thing about a lot of those early things is the fact that they're pretty much, once you plant them, you just sort of forget about them. They come and just do their own thing. You mentioned snowdrops. There's winter aconite, which looks like a little early buttercup.
It's yellow.
It's really nice. A cute little thing. Flower. It's got a little green collar around it. Just looks very, just adorable. And if you go out to Allerton, you'll find it's kind of naturalized itself, the winter aconite with the yellow flowers. But then there's also Siberian squill. Or scillas, they're also called.
Yes,
and that's
that dark blue,
really dark blue, just lovely, sort of hanging, kind of a bell-shaped flower that hangs down. And those two together are just fantastic. You'll just get, they're just so pretty. And those would be really kind of a nice combination. And they're so small, but they are, you know, they're bulbs. And so generally we would plant them in, you know, in October for that spring flower. So you kind of have to keep that in mind and think about that. But, you know, they're small bulbs, easy to plant. You know, they're so tiny. And you can fit them among ground covers and, you know, areas where you just need a little bit of spice, or right next to the sidewalk or something. So you really want that kind of thing going on. So those would be a couple of them. There's also certainly some of the native stuff. You know, comes up really early. Bloodroot is really a wonderful plant that comes up. The flower doesn't last a really long time, what you'll find with those, but the leaves last a long time. They kind of look like Batman. It makes me think of the Batman insignia on Bloodroot. So they have very interesting leaves. Well,
they
look
do?
At it next time.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like Batman.
You say so.
Yeah, well. So that's kind of nice, and so that's something that comes up very early and, you know, just looks beautiful. There's a liverwort or hepatica, which is another early, you know, native wildflower that also comes up and looks beautiful. Some of the trillium, certainly snow trillium, is one of the first ones that pops up, and that's really quite pretty, as well as purple trillium, and there's several different trilliums that are out there that are also native. So, you know, those early things. You just can't, we just cherish those,
we? Yeah.
You're just so glad to see something coming up, then you know there's hope.
Yeah, I have been for a long time. I have been thinking we have some of those things. We have snowdrops and scilla, and I thought, well, it would be nice to have some of these others, particularly the aconite. And I keep thinking about that. And what I need to do is make myself a note on my calendar in September that says, okay, now it's time to start thinking about this, because that's when you, as you say, there you put them in when you would do your tulips or your hyacinth or whatever your spring flowering bulbs are. That's the time when you got to be.
And you can actually sort of mix those with tulips and stuff. You can, you know, put those in with the tulips or daffodils, because these guys come up early, kind of do their thing, and then once the tulips or whatever kind of come up and do their thing. So they can share space. They really don't, you don't need these really specialized areas necessarily. I was thinking of another one, Grecian windflower. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. It's kind of nice in that it's not native, but it's another bulb, and it looks more like a daisy type flower, but you get into pinks and whites and kind of light blues, so kind of more pastel colors, which we don't often see really early like that. So those are nice, but I think the one thing about all these bulbs for the most part is that they need well-drained soil. They just are not going to make it if you've got a really wet spot. And I think that's the thing that I'm wondering. I think this winter is going to be a very good test on what tolerates wet soil in the wintertime, because we've certainly seen that. It's just that I noticed just walking around yesterday, just the areas that normally I would never have water standing, and I've got water standing.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be an excellent test to see what perennials will tolerate that. And we know some of these, such as bulbs and stuff, just really will not take that. So don't be surprised if you find that some of those perennials that normally would have been really tough for you and did real well for you maybe just didn't do all that great this winter, and simply because of how wet it was, not because of how cold it was, but more because of how wet it was.
Well, have you been noticed walking around looking in your yard at some of those things, spring flowering bulbs? They're up.
I know, which I hate to see, because especially since, you know, tonight, I think the next couple of nights going to be pretty cold.
Yeah.
So I think this would be an excellent opportunity. People get a chance. plants. It's great that actually we're getting a little bit of snow. It may sound funny, but it's nice to get a little bit of snow. It actually gives them a little bit of cover. So if you get a chance, or hopefully, maybe I shouldn't say hopefully we get more snow, but I see I like snow, so I'm one of those weird people. But it actually is better for the plants to have that kind of covering. So maybe if you have shredded leaves or something like that, you actually might throw that over the tops of the leaves. It's not going to hurt the flower, but it's definitely the leaves you'll find will kind of burn up.
Yeah. Well, what I found is, or at least what I've noticed in some of these things that are coming up, you know, maybe half inch, three quarters of an inch, someone has come along and chowed on
somebody is eating on them.
So I'm assuming that probably these also are squirrels or rabbits possibly.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So, you know, somebody says, oh, salad bar is open as they're chowing.
Well, they're
on
excited
them,
to get something green this time of year. Do you blame them?
Yeah,
you know,
well, yes.
Oh, okay.
You know how I feel about rabbits. We won't get into that. Yeah. We have a caller here. Others are welcome, too. We have about 15 minutes probably on the show here with Sandy. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. Someone calling here in Mattoon, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have need for a suggestion. Our house fronts on the east. And because of the trees and the fact that it's an eastern exposure, it doesn't get very much direct sunlight during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a narrow strip in front of the house that last year I filled in alternating. I had variegated, coral bells and the plants that like
hosta?
Hostas, thank you. So I alternate variegated hostas and coral bells, and I thought it would be nice at each end of that row to put a nice taller plant that would carry those same kind of color themes through, except the one end, if you're looking at the house, the right end is in the shade almost all the time, and because that's where the hose outlet is, stays fairly moist, and the other end, because it happens to be on the corner of the house, catches quite a bit of sun and so gets dried.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, do you have any suggestions on what I can use to cap off the end of each of that bed that would meet those growing conditions and still color carry those colors through?
Mm-hmm. So are you're looking for a shrub or a
something that would be a little taller, more vertical, but not grow out hugely round? I was looking at some ferns, but then I thought, you know, the sunny end probably wouldn't be good for a fern.
Right. And if you're looking for the same kind of thing, that might be a little bit harder for you.
Yeah.
I guess the things I think about a little bit is, and actually the east side would not be too bad. Now, if it's really wet, that might be an issue. So you may have to, you know, pay attention to that a little bit. But, you know, actually things like the hollies and rhododendrons would really love that. They like moist soil, but they don't like really wet soil. So there's a difference there. They do fine if they get some sun. That's just fine. They actually like the east side of the house because they hate the late afternoon sun. So they actually would really like that. And you'd get a little evergreen look to both of them. So
all
that
right.
would really be nice. And certainly the hollies are going to be a little bit more upright for you for the most part. So you can certainly sort of look at that and see if you like the way those look. And certainly even boxwood, if you don't really care for the kind of coarser texture of Hollywood, boxwood might be another one. But again, all those like moist soil, but not really wet soil. So you're going to have to kind of think about that a little bit. But if it's just moist and it's just getting a little, you know, water from just because you use the hose once in a while, that's not a big issue. But if it actually where water sits, then it's going to be an issue for you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. And let's see. I think we have next, we'll talk with someone in Bloomington, Illinois, line 1. Hello.
Yeah, hi. I've got a question. I know it's a little late, but I've got a question about my lilacs. I meant to call in last summer.
Mm-hmm.
About 3 years ago, I cut them back real hard, this one bush that was about 10 feet tall, and I cut it back real hard down, well, probably about 2 feet tall. And I obviously that was a mistake.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I expected them to come back the next year, and they really didn't. And this one bush didn't come back hardly at all. And then last year they did show some growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, they've been there probably a good 10, 12 years. I expected they'd have more than enough, you know, energy to come back fairly, vigorous, but it seemed like it really knocked them hard. So I don't know. I'm seriously considering just ripping them out.
Right.
So I don't know if there's, you got any suggestions? Or
were these the regular lilacs, the big flowers and the whole thing?
Yeah.
The regular lilacs. I'm really, I'm with you. I'm actually a little surprised they didn't come back better for you than that, because usually they're really almost invigorated by being cut back like that when they've been well established. Did they look good when you cut them back? Did they look healthy when you cut them back?
I thought that they was. At first I thought, at the time, I thought, well, I'm going to cut them back a third and try that. And then I just went crazy and cut them way back. I was, well, I'm just really going to trim this. I don't want to do it again for a while. And it seemed like it almost killed them.
Well, so, they're getting full sun, I take it.
Yeah, they're on the southwest side, and they're in a kind of a raised bed with plenty of drainage. And I, even in the dry part of the summer, I would go out and give them good drink of water.
Okay, because that's what I wondered about too. About
try and keep them going in case that there was something wrong. So I don't know. I was just kind of stumped as to why they. I thought this would really, like you say, invigorate them and make them come back with lush growth. But obviously, that wasn't the case.
The plants don't always read the books.
They missed that chapter.
I'm really surprised they didn't, because they, certainly you would have think they would be established enough. So I'd wonder a little bit about, you know, just whether they had some sort of underlying issues already. They certainly can get borers. They can also get scale. And I don't know if you're familiar with scale on plants. And actually, you could even see it on those old stems. It flicks off with your, they're like little helmets for the most part, kind of oyster shell looking helmet things. Flick off with your thumbnail. And I would make sure it doesn't have scale, because that certainly would be old enough where it might, and it certainly, it really zaps their health immensely, more than you might think. So I'd look for that, make sure we don't have some kind of underlying issue there. I wouldn't give up on them just yet. I would certainly, probably fertilize them this spring, water them during drought periods, as you said before, and kind of give them a chance. But I'm with you. If something doesn't happen here pretty soon, I'd be ready to replace them. But I am surprised. What time of year did you do this? You pruned them back when?
I did them after bloom.
Right after bloom, which is normally
June. Last part of June, I would say. It was totally done blooming.
Right. And see, you really did everything that I normally would recommend. So it's kind of scares me to hear this. I hope I didn't recommend it, did I? No, it's not me.
I read the book, but it didn't, obviously. Yeah.
So I kind of baby them along. I'd certainly, again, look for scale, because that's what I really wonder, if we don't have an insect problem here that just isn't obvious, that's really zapping them a little bit more, and then kind of go from there and see if you can encourage some, because usually they sucker up from the bottom so much that it's not an issue.
Yeah.
The thing that I have noticed, that's why I was asking about if it was really, the old-fashioned type, it seems like some of the newer ones, from my experience at least, some like Miss Kim and some of those smaller ones, they don't seem to rebound as fast once they've been pruned.
Now that you say Miss Kim, I believe those are the variety that I had.
Because
I've got an old-fashioned lilac right beside it, and
I've got two Miss Kims
beside each other, and the one in the middle that I trimmed down severely was a Miss Kim.
Yep. And that may very well be. And I think that's just what I've seen, is just the nature of the beast, is that they just don't seem to rebound like we see with the old-fashioned one. So you may not have done anything wrong whatsoever. And I think you may find that it is not going to look like the plant you had hoped. And I also notice, I will tell people, with Miss Kim is that they get much bigger than the books say, too, at least around here. They'll say 5 foot. They'll get well above 5 foot.
So, oh, yeah, they was 10 feet tall, and it was like...
They like our soil, I think.
Unacceptable to me.
Yeah, yeah, Yeah. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of a surprise with Miss Kim. They're great plants, and I love them. They're small flower, a little later flowering, really nice, super nice plants. But I think they're definitely one of those that needs to be sort of judiciously pruned rather than the hack back method that we often use with the old fashions. So,
yeah. I've discovered
you found that out, too, the hard way.
Yeah. The only thing that would with a fungal disease, the only thing they would always get, and it seemed like the old fashioned one, especially beside it, would get that kind of a. It's not a rust; it's just like a grayish,
right.
Old color, especially getting into August in the hot summer days. They would always get that kind of a grayish tinge to the leaves, and it's like, well, that's just the nature of the beast.
Right. And it's powdery mildew. It's really common on the old, especially on the old fashioned ones. That was one of the nice things about Miss Kim's, that it didn't seem to have a powdery mildew. But and then usually it's more of an aesthetic thing than anything with powdery mildew. So most of the time it's not going to cause a plant to necessarily die, at least with lilacs. Right. Now, other plants, certainly an issue. But yeah.
Sure.
So I think you just found just something that's a little bit different with that particular variety. So,
okay.
Well, good luck.
Should I hang tight, or should I just...
Personally, I think I would take them out. Knowing that they're Miss Kim, personally, I would take them out.
Okay.
And start all over again.
Okay. Well,
there's
I've
some
got
other...
access to a tractor with a loader, and I just give it a yank.
Well, good luck.
That's an easy way to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, really. You're right. You're absolutely right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go. We'll talk next with someone in Vermilion County. This is Line 2. Hello.
Hi. On the garden walk last June, I saw a blue hydrangea, which I think was called Endless Summer. Anyway, it was blue.
Mm-hmm.
And it was planted in a beautiful setting, and I'm wondering if I could get one to grow in what is partial shade. On the north side of my house, there's an L made by the building that would make it the northeast light, so that it's shaded in the afternoon completely. Would it get enough light there?
Sure.
Okay.
I have really been impressed with how much shade hydrangeas will take, a lot more shade than I always thought about, because, you know, the flowers are so big, you always think flowering, you got to have some sun. I've really been surprised at how well they flower in shadier spots. I've seen them on the north side of people's houses, and they look beautiful. So
I
wouldn't hesitate.
Okay, they like acid soil to keep them blue?
Right. To get them blue, they have to be on the soil has to be on the acid side. Usually we use aluminum sulfate.
Oh, I knew that. I've heard you say that. I wonder if dumping my coffee grounds there would also be a good thing to do?
You know, that's fine. Adds a little compost. I wouldn't expect that to change the pH all that much. So that's just adding. They like high organic matter, acid soil, moist soil. They really suffer if they dry out too much. That's the other big thing.
And can I keep it trimmed back so it doesn't get too big?
Sure. The nice thing about Endless Summer, it's one of those that actually blooms on new wood and old wood both, which is different from a lot of our hydrangeas. So they're one of those you can pretty much prune any time and still. I probably wouldn't prune it early in the spring because you're going to lose those really early flowers. But, you know, pretty much any time you can prune those.
Now, when do I buy it and plant it?
The springtime's just fine.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
All right, one more at least. Caller in Robinson. This is Line 4. Hello.
Hello, Sandy.
Hi.
I have a suggestion for the man that wanted a sentinel plant at the each end of his coral bells and hosta.
Mm-hmm.
If he can tolerate a shrub, I would suggest Weigela.
Oh.
Particularly the variegated one, which will give him green and white like his hostas, and will give him pink or red flowers like his coral bells.
Sure. That's a very good suggestion.
Okay.
You're thinking. That's good.
It may grow taller than he likes, but it can be cut back.
Yeah, they're easy to trim, but they certainly have a lot of interest.
Right.
Long season. So that's great. Okay, great. Thanks.
Well, very good. Thank you. We are just about getting down to the point where we have to finish up. I guess we mentioned one more time the Garden Day for 2007, March 2nd.
March 2nd and 3rd. We're actually doing a special work day on the 2nd with Janet Makunovich, who I've mentioned before is going to be on the show with us in February. Mm-hmm. And we're doing a special workshop on the 2nd, kind of talking about paths and focal points, because, you know, a lot of times our gardens, we put the paths in later or just utilitarian or whatever, but she's really going to get us to think more about where focal points should be, where paths should be, and then just surfaces. What do you use? Do you want to use wood? Do you want to use, you know? So I think that'll be a great session with her on the 2nd. And then on the 3rd, we have four speakers who are going to talk about a wide variety of things. Again, sort of talking about, it's kind of the garden journey is what we're calling it. So it's more like on paths and designing and looking at plants. Foliage plants are a big thing now, where it's just the foliage as much as it is the flower when it comes to a lot of perennials. And we have Stephanie Cohen's going to come in and talk about that. She's another great author, wrote a couple of great perennial books. So I think it'd be a nice wide variety of things for people.
Okay. And if people want to sign up for this?
The new thing this year, we're so excited, people can actually register online. You can register and pay with your credit card. We've never had that opportunity before. They can go to our website, which is very simple, just champaign.extension.uiuc.edu. No slashes, no www, just champaign.extension.uiuc.edu. Put that in. You'll go in, get online registration, real easy.
Okay, very good. So again, that's March 2nd. And between
March
then
2nd,
now
3rd.
And then, Janet Makunovich, who's going to be one of your special guests, will be joining us for your next visit here in February.
Right.
And she'll be on the phone, but then maybe we can talk about a little bit about this sort of garden design issue and get people excited, and then they'll want to sign
sure.
up for the program.
Very Sounds good. Great.
Thank you very much. Sandy Mason is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here once a month, always on Tuesday, and we invite your questions on lawn and garden care.